Okay, welcome once again to the program, Jeff Merrick Hockey Show, for this Tuesday, May 17th. Thanks so much, as always, for joining me today. Today's show is going to be a little bit fluid in that it'll be reaction mode. It is closeout day for a lot of teams. Some interesting comments from players like Brian Rust of the Pittsburgh Penguins, Minnesota Wild general manager Bo Guerin talking about Marc-Andre Fleury, and Bruce Cassidy discussing Jake DeBrusk and what the future may hold for someone who really did play well for the Boston Bruins this season. But a lot of the oxygen being used around the Toronto Maple Leafs today. Heard a number of the players already. We are standing by for head coach Sheldon Keefe. We will go to that presser. We'll also go to the Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan pressers. You will hear from Elliot Friedman, who will comment on all of this, not just Maple Leafs, but news from around the NHL. We'll talk, if we can get into it, about the Mark Stone back surgery, what that means for Vegas, anything else on coaching hunts. We'll talk about the Bruins. We'll talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins and what might be in store there. And we'll talk about whatever Sheldon, Kyle, and Brendan talk about here in minutes as we default to those press conferences. Meanwhile, a couple of things here from today already. Jason Spezza. Oh boy. Veteran player, as we all know, hard on the sleeve, all of it. At his press conference today, talking about how he feels a little bit lost, wondering if he did enough this season to help his team in their playoff efforts. Mark Giordano discussing how he really enjoyed his time with the Maple Leafs and is open to staying. I would imagine that there would be interest in one, if not both, of the last two players that I mentioned, the two veteran players. I would imagine that if, you know, Giordano comes in on a quote-unquote value contract, they would be open to keeping him. Austin Matthews battling knee and groin issues down the stretch. William Nylander, interestingly enough, and shouldn't be a surprise to anybody either, talking about how he's heard trade rumors since he first got to Toronto, and says that he wants to be in Toronto and help his team become more successful. You know, that is the one player. Some people think it's lazy, and at times I think it is as well, that they point to and say, the Leafs need to make a deal, and that's the guy they got to get out. Nylander's heard all of it. Jake Muzzin discussed concussions and his upper body injury, said he'll be fine to go next season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, Jack Campbell was interesting. You know, he really did not want to talk about the next contract at all. He's going to, you know, leave that to Kurt Overhart as his agent. Said he's still processing what happened over the weekend. As much as the assembled media tried to get something out of Jack Campbell, would he stay on a hometown discount, etc., all those conversations, all those questions, Campbell was clearly ready for it. Responded accordingly by saying, that's between Kyle Dubas and my agent, Kurt Overhart. Not a surprise at all. As I mentioned, we'll hear from the coach, we'll hear from the general manager here in a couple of moments, and it'll be, you know, particularly curious to hear what Kyle Dubas has to say coming off this season, where the Maple Leafs certainly did enjoy a lot of highs individually. They enjoyed a regular season, which was certainly a high historically for this franchise. You know, many have pointed out that this is a team that stayed right there with the Tampa Bay Lightning the entire way. Perhaps you can say the difference maker in this one were the power play goals. And that was it. The 5-on-5, it was a saw-off, might have even been advantage Toronto Maple Leafs. But then a game 7 with the Maple Leafs had the same conclusion that previous game 7s have had. And that is a loss for the Maple Leafs, and they go home after the first round. Really, when it comes down to it, the big story of today will be what happens tonight, and that is round 2 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, provided we have time. And again, like I said, the Maple Leafs are going to suck up a lot of the oxygen today, but provided we have time, we'll hear from Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic. It is the Blues and the Colorado Avalanche. Avs coming off a sweep, as we all know, of the Nashville Predators. Series win for the St. Louis Blues over the Minnesota Wild. St. Louis really playing some real good hockey. We've talked about the depth that this team has heading into the playoffs. That was certainly on display against the Minnesota Wild. 9 20-goal scorers in the lineup for St. Louis. They almost had a 10th what was Justin Falk at, 16 or 17 goals. They could have had, you know, they're pretty close to having 10, 20 goal scorers on this team. A couple of 30 goal scorers in Vladimir Tarasenko and Pavel Buchnevich. It was a good season for the St. Louis Blues, and they finally won some playoff games. Jordan Binnington finally won some playoff games. Jordan Binnington is back, but we'll see how he fares tonight against a Colorado Avalanche team that has probably turned in consistently, as a team, the best efforts we've seen all season long, or all playoff long, rather. The way they dispatched the Nashville Predators was clinical, and as much as Jake Oettinger we point to as the Conn Smythe Trophy winner from the first round, the performance of Cale Makar in the first four games that we saw was nothing less than spectacular. The skating for... Think of how good a skater Cale Makar was when he started in the NHL. No, think of how good a skater Cale Makar was when he played in college. No, think of how good a skater Cale Makar already was when he played for the Brooks Bandits. He continues to improve his skating. His skating keeps on getting better and better. Cale Makar was their MVP in the first round, and if it weren't for that performance by Jake Oettinger, we'd probably be looking at Cale Makar as a Conn Smythe Trophy winner coming out of the first round, albeit only in four games. But he was just that dominant, just that good. We'll see what he has up his sleeve tonight as the St. Louis Blues face off against the Colorado Avalanche. But that is only one of the games aboard this evening, and you can watch that one on CBC and Sportsnet starting at 9:30 Eastern. The other one, which gets underway early, or earlier rather, 7 o'clock Eastern, so 4 Pacific. You can watch it on CBC and you can watch it on Sportsnet as well, Hockey Night in Canada with your host Ron McLean, the Tampa Bay Lightning facing off against the Florida Panthers. You know, we've talked about this for a long time and got the first taste of this last season in the playoffs in a really hard-fought series that was won by the Tampa Bay Lightning en route to winning their second of two Stanley Cups back-to-back. The franchise, as we all know, has won three. Do things feel different a second time around? I guess they do. Florida is a team that had a good scare thrown into them by the Washington Capitals. You know, Peter Laviolette and the Caps, you know, found out a way, figured a way, although it's not exactly a secret how to trap in the neutral zone, but they were able to really nullify and slow down Florida's rush game. And that is where Florida dined out all season long. Maybe the best rush team in the NHL all season, safe to say. Just a quick little glance around the room. Anyone want to say anyone was better on the rush than the Florida Panthers? Didn't think so. Peter Laviolette and the Washington Capitals able to slow down the Panthers and not allow them to enter the zone with any type of speed. That's where the Panthers have always killed you. It's one thing for the Capitals to slow down the Panthers. Now the Panthers have to face off against their state rivals and the team that many look at always and say, if the Panthers are going to do anything, they need to slay their mental dragon, which is the Tampa Bay Lightning. There's always been, you know, that younger sibling or smaller sibling type vibe between the Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa has won Stanley Cups. Tampa has, you know, turned in, you know, created Hall of Famers. Tampa has been pointed at as one of the model franchises around the NHL. They share a state with the Panthers. But the Panthers' history, quite different than that of the Tampa Bay Lightning. The success has not been there. The closest they got was 1996, as we all know. Uwe Krupp in the final game against Doug McLean's Florida Panthers. That was the year of the rat, right? Scott Mellenby. We all remember that phenomenon. But the story of the Florida Panthers has been mediocre to subpar play consistently. I know they've always been the team that's been the butt of every attendance joke, them in Arizona. And I still maintain that part of the burr under the saddle for the Florida Panthers, specifically this year as they're running up the score on teams, part of that is this organization is just flat out sick of being the butt of all these jokes. I think it's great. They played with a chip on their shoulder all season long. They didn't mind running up scores. Who cares? This is a team that can handle themselves physically and can play a skilled game as well. And provided they get goaltending, they can hang with any team in the NHL. But the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs are a different beast. There is regular season Tampa, and then there is playoff Tampa. And we saw this play itself out 3 years ago. in that series against the Columbus Blue Jackets, where, and I can still remember John Cooper talking about what the President's Trophy and setting records in the regular season meant to the organization, and they blew their brains out trying to do that. Need to set the record for most wins, for points. We got to win the President's Trophy. This is big for the organization. And it led to a flameout against the Columbus Blue Jackets, as we've discussed numerous times, and always bring this up as an example. And then there were wild trade rumors of the draft that year in Vancouver. And Julien Brisebois stuck with it and stuck with the team. And of course, there's always minor tweaks, but stuck with the team that was embarrassed against the Blue Jackets. And now we're talking about them three-peating. It's one thing to win a Stanley Cup, as we've seen in the salary cap era. It's another thing to win back-to-back cups. That's next to impossible. Where do you put a three-peat? You know, given the realities of what salary caps bring along with them, on the scale of difficult things to achieve for a team in the NHL, where do you put three-peat? Like, we've seen teams win three Stanley Cups, Chicago Blackhawks, but it wasn't three in a row. Seen the Los Angeles Kings win a couple of cups, wasn't in a row. Like, winning Stanley Cups back-to-back is hard. Ask the Pittsburgh Penguins. Ask the Pittsburgh Penguins how hard that is, or sorry, that was. Three-peat? Given that, you know, Tampa had their entire third line leave, and they had to makeshift another third line, which looked pretty good against Toronto Maple Leafs. Thank you very much. You know, they had to MacGyver up a third line. Let's see if, you know, Hagel and Paul, let's see if they can do this. Kind of like the Gord line used to do. Series one, look good. Nick Paul looks good. Can they do it against the Florida Panthers? To me, the big story all season long has been, can Tampa three-peat? Second challenge tonight. They've dispatched the Toronto Maple Leafs. Second challenge starts this evening. Panthers have home ice. It is the Florida Panthers facing off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Colorado Avalanche facing off against the St. Louis Blues. A couple of other things that have that trickled in today, as now teams are all doing their exits. Should mention as well, Selke Trophy. Here are your finalists in alphabetical order. Alexander Barkov, Patrice Bergeron, and Elias Lindholm. Barkov, I've always sideways joked, is Finnish for Bergeron. Those were not my final three. I had two of them on my ballot, one of them not. But those are three very deserving finalists. Although I still maintain, and Calgary fans do not want to hear this, specifically Craig Conroy, who we had on the podcast a couple weeks ago, does not want to hear this. But the race for the Selke, folks, is for number two. Like, the Selke was wrapped up a while ago. And it was wrapped up by Patrice Bergeron. Patrice Bergeron, when you look at how the Selke Trophy is measured, you know, the underlying numbers that measure the Selke Trophy and the impacts, both defensively and offensively, that a player has, this thing was wrapped up a while ago by Patrice Bergeron. The race is for number two. And that's what makes the Bergeron decision, you know, so tough here. You know, I guess there's one school of thought that says, if you're going to leave the stage while the audience is still clapping. I get that. And everyone's still clapping to Patrice Bergeron. There's going to be one more big clap for Patrice Bergeron, and that's when he wins the Selke Trophy. Because make no mistake about it, this is Bergeron's trophy. He will win this thing. I understand the idea of leave the stage while the audience is still clapping. And if Patrice Bergeron calls it a career, I think we'd all look at it and say, it sucks, it's a drag, but you're going out on top. You're still a great player. You're still an NHL trophy player. You know, it's like when Lidstrom walked away and said he had enough. You know, you're still getting Norris Trophy votes. And he was the last guy we talked about being as perfect as a player could ever be. And since Nick Lidstrom, is there another player? I know it's a different position that Bergeron plays, but is there another player that you looked at and said the same thing that we said about Lidstrom? That's as close to a perfect player as we see in the NHL right now. We said it about Lidstrom, and we've been saying it about Patrice Bergeron. for how long as well. Again, which makes, if he makes a decision to leave the game, to call it a career, that makes it a tough one. You see, I never like telling people when to retire. Like, that is a very personal decision for anybody in any field, okay? And I'll tell you who I have a lot of respect for. As much as people respect the players that, quote-unquote, go out on top, right? The boxer that retires undefeated, right? I kind of like the player that has to be dragged off the ice, that spends those extra years in the league. And I always think of Peter Forsberg. And I always think of Peter Forsberg, you know, trying to find the magic boot that fit that foot that would allow him to play comfortably for however many more years. But the one thing that Forsberg didn't do is he didn't quit. And I'm not saying that Patrice Bergeron, if he retires, is quitting. There is a big difference here. But I always have a lot of respect for the guys that many look at and say, he's just hanging on. What does he have to prove? You know, in sports, we're supposed to applaud the people that don't give up, that don't quit, that want to keep doing it. And I really understood Forsberg's mentality. I understood the idea that as long as I can play, I will. Because I don't think that that drive goes away. I don't think that desire goes away. Maybe if it does go away, then you say, yeah, it's time to retire. You know, Kelly Rudy, I've always made this point. Kelly Rudy once said to me, we were talking about when he made the decision to retire, and he said, the minute you start thinking about it, part of you retires. Or maybe succinctly, the minute you think about retirement, you're retired. Because in your head, if you even contemplate retirement, you can never get it back out. It's gone. But when you're like 20, 21, 22 years old, who's contemplating retirement? None of them. Anyway, long-winded way of me saying, I like guys that just keep playing for as long as they can. I don't buy the whole argument about it diminishes how we feel about them. Oh, think of their reputation. They're a shell of their former selves. I kind of like that. I got to be honest with you. The guy that refuses to stop competing, I got a lot of time for that guy. I got a lot of time for that player. The one that says, I am going to keep playing. That's why I love Forsberg. Loved it. And I love Bergeron. One of my favorite players. I've always said Gabriel Landeskog is my favorite player in the game right now. Man, Bergeron's close. Bergeron's as close to a perfect player as we've seen. Anyway, Bergeron nominated for the Selke today. A few things as well. I mentioned some closeout interviews and some press conferences. By the way, Mark Stone, back surgery. Expects to be perfect and ready to go come next season. You know, Vegas is going to have a fascinating offseason. We'll document as much as we can here and on the podcast and various Twitter feeds and our Sportsnet website, certainly. Brian Rust. So Brian Rust, with a couple of interesting comments, as we all wonder now what happens to the Pittsburgh Penguins and what happens to Malkin, what happens to Letang, and then by extension, what happens to Crosby. Because, you know, I'm sorry, I don't care who the manager is. You run stuff by Crosby. He's earned that with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Here's a comment from Brian Rust this morning. Quote, I feel like I've played to a higher level than what my contract said in the last few years. I feel like I've played to a higher level than what my contract said in the last few years. Translation, I'm underpaid. Probably is. He's got a point. You know, some will point out like, oh yeah, of course, you know, you play with Sidney Crosby, your points are going to go up. I look at it the other way. He earned a spot on Crosby's line. That says something. You know, it's like the rookie argument around Michael Bunting. Oh, look at Michael Bunting. Of course, his stats are going to be bigger. He plays with Matthews and Marner. No, he earned a spot with Matthews and Marner. That's significant. I guess it all depends on how you look at it. Russ did add, for the purposes of clarity here, Russ did add that he was only looking for a contract that is fair. just as an aside, folks, just once I want to see a player come out and say, yeah, like what I'm really looking for here is to sucker someone into overpay me. I really want to get paid more than I kind of deserve. I'd really like to hit a home run. I really need to ring the bell here. Players will always talk about fair. My other favorite one is This isn't about money. This is about respect. Usually when they say that, it's about money. Russ says he wants what's fair and adds, I'd like to think something gets worked out here. Listen, if he wants to chase, people have made this point as well. If you want to chase the last nickel and the last dime, I get it. And I get it specifically for Brian Rust, because it's not as if he spent his entire career, you know, going from, you know, $15 million deal to $20 million deal, and he's stuck like 60 large in the bank. I get it. This is his shot, albeit later in his career at 30, to finally hit it and set himself up and his family. I do not disparage that person one bit. I understand where Brian Rust is coming from. I get it. We would all do the same thing, I would submit, if we were all in Brian Rust's shoes, Brian Rust's position. He can chase it, and there'll be teams that'll pay it. A lot of teams with cap space, a lot of teams would want someone like Brian Rust on the team, someone that can score goals. Seattle Kraken, I'm looking your direction. We'll see what happens with Brian Rust and the Pittsburgh Penguins, as we will with Malkin and Letang. Bruce Cassidy, interesting comment on Jake DeBrusk. Now, DeBrusk asked for a trade this year. We all know that. That's well told. Jake DeBrusk also had a really good season. And as the Boston Bruins went through various injury woes, Jake DeBrusk was huge. And at times playing, you know, top line. Like, DeBrusk played up and down the lineup this season for the Boston Bruins and played really well. Bruce Cassidy saying today, we all made it work. I was proud of the way he played. Adding that anything else about trade requests or trade accommodation, that would all depend on Don Sweeney and Rick Follett, who's the agent for Bruce Cassidy, or for Jake DeBrusk. Cassidy not willing to wade into that one. That's one that you stay away from if you're the Boston Bruins right now. That is the quote-unquote sensitive issue. And this, as an aside, too, I got to really hand it to Jake DeBrusk. It's tough to, like, it's tough for any player. Let me frame it this way. It's tough for any player to request a trade, right? Because you're going into the general manager's office and you know it's going to get out to your teammates that you want to leave, that you want to go, and that can sour your reputation in the room. It can. Like, there are players who had, you know, who signed offer sheets, and then when they went back to their team, weren't exactly welcome back with open arms because you, quote unquote, tried to leave. You wanted to go. You don't really want to be here. I think Ryan O'Reilly may have gone through some of that with the Colorado Avalanche, and then inevitably ended up getting traded to the Buffalo Sabres. So making that decision to go to the general manager and say, I would like a trade. This isn't working out. I want out of here. It's a tough one for a player to make in a lot of cases because you're concerned about how your teammates are going to treat you. Credit to the Boston Bruins, who treated him no differently. Credit to Bruce Cassidy as well, who, listen, when they could use Jake DeBrusk in a significant way, you know, held, you know, no ill temper towards the player and used him in big spots. And good on Jake DeBrusk because he continued to perform, where some players may get boo-boo face and just want to go home and I don't want to be here and let's force a trade and let's make it really uncomfortable for the organization. Jake DeBrusk played, man. Jake DeBrusk played hockey real hard. Like, there were conversations between the Boston Bruins and the New York Rangers. I know they were interested in Jake DeBrusk. I would imagine a lot of teams were interested in Jake DeBrusk. I don't think it ever really got close with anybody. The Boston Bruins really needed Jake DeBrusk this season, and he performed, man. But as far as I understand, that trade request is still very much in play, and that request stands. I don't believe that has been rescinded. We'll see what happens with Jake DeBrusk in the offseason. The other interesting note is Bill Guerin, general manager of the Minnesota Wild. So we all wondered what was going to happen with the goaltending situation with Minnesota once they lost to the St. Louis Blues. What becomes of Marc-Andre Fleury, who has indicated that he wants to play – One more season? I think that's what he said. I want to play one more year. And a lot of that's going to depend on where our, you know, a conversation with my family, where we want to be, which teams want me, etc. I think that's probably Carney for, I want to go back to Pittsburgh. I want to play my last year with the Pittsburgh Penguins. That is, again, the belief amongst many in the NHL world. But many, Soda, would like to re-sign him. Bill Guerin, general manager of the Wild today, saying he wants to try to sign Marc-Andre Fleury and that he wants the battery of Marc-Andre Fleury and Cam Talbot back. Oh boy. We talked about a number of different times this year the situation that is about to befall the Minnesota Wild, and now we're here. And that is the enormous cap black hole that are the contracts of Suter and Parisi, and the effects that's going to have up and down the lineup. And Bill Guerin, I got to give Bill Guerin credit, because he knew this when he made the move. Now, he thought about, you know, the culture of this team, what the room is like, what we need to do as an organization, and said we can't do it with Parisi and Suter still here. Is there going to be pain? Oh yeah. There's going to be a lot of pain. And I think that the the black hole of salary cap space that they now have for the next three seasons because of the two buyouts, I think that's significantly I think Jack Eichel was affected by that, as much as Eichel may have looked at Minnesota as a possible destination, knowing that they wouldn't have the resources to ice their most competitive team possible, kept Jack Eichel away from saying, yeah, Minnesota could be a cool place to go. Yeah, Minnesota could be a spot for me. And I think we're going to see that with some other free agents too. Not necessarily that Minnesota's going to have the cap space to go free agent shopping. If anything, this cap black hole is going to cost him Kevin Fiala, who's going to go for picks and prospects. I think we all understand that by this point. Unless they do some major damage to their blue line, it's going to be next to impossible to keep Kevin Fiala with the Minnesota Wild. So Guerin saying he wants Marc-Andre Fleury and Cam Talbot back is interesting. And listen, sometimes general managers will say things just so they don't put up with the drama of extending a story, right? And we're seeing it today, and we'll continue to see it as exit interviews continue. Players will always say, you know, they love it here, they want to stay, but I'll let my agent work it out. And I would say that most times players do believe that. But other times, I think players might just say something. I shouldn't say might. Players will say something just to make sure they don't extend drama in their lives. I think we all do that, actually. I do, you do. Everybody listening to this does that just so there's no drama. Just so you don't bring it on yourself. So does Bill Guerin want to bring back Cam Talbot and Marc-Andre Fleury? I will take him at his word. Right now, the goaltending situation is a tough one for the Minnesota Wild. Many, as I mentioned, are of the firm belief that Marc-Andre Fleury would like to finish up in Pittsburgh. That is the destination, and that is why Elliott's mentioned this a couple of different times in a couple of different places, that one of the reasons why Marc-Andre Fleury always resisted overtures from the Washington Capitals. Okay, like Chicago was going to honor the deal that was made by Stan Bowman and Marc-Andre Fleury. We will not move you somewhere that you don't want to go. As much as Washington tried to pry Marc-Andre Fleury away from the Chicago Blackhawks, he always resisted. And the belief is that he did so because he did not want to damage his reputation in Pittsburgh. That in the back of his mind, he always imagined himself finishing up his career where he started his career, in Pittsburgh. So that's one thing that Bill Guerin, you know, has to measure off here. Now, listen, we don't even know if Pittsburgh's interested. I would suspect they are, but I don't know. Casey DeSmith is a free agent. Come back with a combination of Tristan Jarry and Marc-Andre Fleury? It would make for a nice story. Marc-Andre Fleury playing his last season with the Penguins. But then there's the Cam Talbot situation. And Cam Talbot, you know, as we talked about here on this show, every time we'd have Mike Russo on, right, from The Athletic, who covers the Wild, we'd always mention, like, what more does Cam Talbot need to do? What more does Cam Talbot need to do to earn a playoff game? What was his record down the stretch? Like 15-0-1? Like, it was something ridiculous. Like, all of us, like, there were struggles all season long between Kakinen and Talbot. There were times where both goaltenders struggled. And that was part of the reason why Bill Guerin went out and got Marc-Andre Fleury. Brought him in for the playoff run and for the playoffs. But down the stretch, Talbot was awesome. And he sits for the playoffs. Good soldier. Good soldier. Sitting there putting on the brave face. Doing the backup who should really be a starter, brave face on the bench. Given that look. You know what's going through his mind. What will go through your mind? Same thing that went through his mind. Difference is, he won't say so publicly. Total pro through all of it. Got a lot of time for Cam Talbot. Total pro. Was he upset? Absolutely. You want players to be upset in that situation. But then compounding it, Minnesota let it get to a point where they're down in the series. They're about to lose. And Cam Talbot, who down the stretch was their best goaltender, is now turned into a Hail Mary pass. And are there bad feelings from Talbot? I never want to put too much into an athlete's spouse's social media, although generally where there's smoke, right? There's probably some fence mending to do there between the Minnesota Wild and Cam Talbot. Just like there's a lot of fence mending to be done and relationship mending to be done between Robin Lehner and the Vegas Golden Knights organization and whomever becomes the next coach there. We're going to pause. When we come back, we're standing by for the press conferences for Kyle Dubas, general manager of the Maple Leafs, team president Brendan Shanahan, and also Sheldon Keefe. So we're standing by for those. Quick pause, more of the Merrick Show in moments. And don't forget games tonight, right, folks? We got the Battle of Florida. That gets underway at 7 o'clock, 9:30. We have the Colorado Avalanche hosting the St. Louis Blues. Round two starts tonight. It's a beautiful day. Round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs begins this evening. More of the Merrick Show in moments across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Breaking down everything in Leafsland better than anyone. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, starting at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Glad you could join me. We are standing by for more Leafs pressers. Hope you enjoyed the filibuster and kick off the show. We'll hear from Sheldon Keefe in a couple of moments, Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan as well. Elliot Friedman will comment afterwards if there is still enough oxygen left on the program. Matty Marchese, my producer, joining me now. Matty, how are you today, buddy?
Buddy, after listening to that, you've inspired me to be a better broadcaster.
Oh, please. I was just tap dancing, bud. You learned that in first year broadcasting, even though I never went to school for broadcasting, as I'm sure many can tell. I put my English and philosophy degree to work.
No, that was a great job. I have to give you kudos because you know I don't like to do that all the time.
You shouldn't. Hey, Chris Tanev's on the ice. Chris Tanev's on the ice for the Calgary Flames.
I did notice that. Talk about a big boost. Assuming that he's going to go tomorrow night, but when you look at just how that series went, I think even the Calgary Flames, if you gave them the truth serum, would have thought we really didn't expect it to go that deep. We didn't expect to have that much trouble. Although the Stars were, you know, a solid defensive team and they're physical, but I don't think the Calgary thought they were going to get that beaten up over the course of that series.
Nope. Listen, I picked a sweep. Not that I'm some genius. Well, obviously I'm not. I thought that was the only one that was going to be a sweep. I thought Nashville, I can't really look at my picks, but I think Nashville, I had Nashville at least winning a game from Colorado. Not even close. I thought Calgary was just going to stomp the Dallas Stars. I had just seen, you know, the interesting thing about Dallas this year was we saw a couple of different teams from the Dallas Stars. We saw one team that, oh, wow, this team is going to be a, you know, a playoff threat. You don't want to face these guys in the playoffs. Other times it's like, well, this, I think they're headed to the lottery here. And they should maybe look at moving out some of their players come trade deadline time. But what I don't think what any of us accounted for was the Ottinger show. And I think that, like, honestly, the performance of Jake Ottinger covered up a lot of mistakes by the Dallas Stars, obviously. And I think that, you know, this is what, you know, Jim Rutherford talked about this in Vancouver, which I'm sure did not amuse Bruce Boudreau one bit, when he talked about, you know, how much of what happened down the stretch was just Thatcher Demko and not really about the team.
Not a nice thing to hear.
If you're the head coach now, I hated our exits and it didn't like, oh, geez. But I thought that, like, look, Dallas, they're a young team. Dallas is a team that's going to be, like, you see the future with Ottinger and Haskinen and Robertson and Wyatt Johnson coming and Maverick Bork and Ty Dellandrea. Like, there's really good young players here in this organization that are either A, already there, or B, on the horizon and will be there soon. They're just going to, Dallas is just going to go through this weird transition phase. And, you know, Calgary caught them. Like, I think we're going to look at this series one day and we're going to say, remember Jake Ottinger and what he did against the Calgary Flames? And also we'll look at it and we'll say, you know, that was the end of this Dallas Stars era. Like, John Klingberg's not coming back. Klingberg's going somewhere where they need someone to run a power play. So take your pick. Is that Seattle? That makes a whole lot of sense. Is that Montreal? That could make some sense too. You know, when big name players are available, you know, Carolina is always sniffing around and they inquired on Klingberg at various points this season as well. Colorado is in on everything big, although I'm not sure that would fit what Joe Sakic is trying to do and wouldn't fit their salary cap structure. But I think we'll look at it and we'll say, yeah, that Calgary series was the end of this era of the Dallas Stars. Do you not think, Maddie?
Oh, I agree. End of an era, but beginning of a new one that will include, like you said, some young guys who they have high expectations for. We will also, I believe, look back on this playoff for Jake Ottinger and say, this is the moment when Jake Ottinger arrived. I saw somebody point out, I think it was Nick Alberga, and he said, I can't believe that Jake Ottinger played games in the AHL this year. Like, think about that.
Well, that was the plan. Yeah. Don't forget, like, so...
Well, they had 100 goalies.
They had 100 goalies, so, man, you know what? They got so lucky. They got so lucky on Ben Bishop. Like, do you remember when they let Ben Bishop have that rehab stint in the American Hockey League? Mm-hmm. This is going to sound awful, okay? What I'm about to say is going to sound really bad. But if Ben Bishop was healthy for those AHL games and had to be called up to the Dallas Stars, the worst possible thing that could have happened to Dallas. Because they would have had to move out, what, $5 million, $6 million worth of salary caps. They would have to make some sizable moves here to accommodate Ben Bishop. And then what, first game back, could have been injured again. Like, yeah. The Bishop thing could have blown up in their face so bad this year. Does it make me a horrible human being by saying they were lucky that he was injured?
Well, no. Well, I mean, it's... What other ways are to phrase it? I mean, like,
I don't try to give the whole situation a soft landing, but, like, seriously, like,
you can't.
They got luck. And then Hudobin got hurt, and he was supposed to be the guy with Braden Holtby this year, and then Ottinger was going to go down to the American League and push and push and push and get his call up, and they're going to make a move with Anton Hudobin, and then to your point, he got hurt, and then that didn't happen, and by the end it was Ottinger and Holtby, you know, dueling out, and Holtby's getting injured, and Ottinger's taken over, and now that's it. They're done. They have their goaltender.
Yeah, what a way to find out.
Never play in the American Hockey League. Yeah, never play in the American Hockey League again.
Yeah, no, he's there to stay. We do have some other musings. The Pittsburgh Penguins. So Evgeny Malkin was on the podium, and this is his quote: "I understand it's a business. I love this city. I love these fans so much. But if the team wants young blood and new guys, and says you should move on, I'm fine." And then the other quote is: "I hope I stay here. I hope I retire here."
Yep.
I just don't see that happening. There's just part of me that doesn't see it.
I could see them bringing him in on a short-term deal. I just think that they're going to be too far away on money. And I can see, I can see Malkin measuring his contract with Crosby and saying, all right, 3 years. You know, we'll call it a career together. Same time.
Yeah.
They need and want cap flexibility. Pittsburgh yes. does. And let's not forget, too, this is a new ownership group. Right? This isn't being run the way that, you know, when Mario was, you know, owning the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, Mario Lemieux and Ron Burke, like this isn't being run that way. This is the Fenway Sports Group. You know, it's interesting. On the podcast, Elliot brought up an interesting point. He said, you know, don't forget, you know, the Fenway Sports Group are an ownership group that make a lot of decisions based on analytics. And correct. Not just analytics in sports, but analytics in business as well. To the point where, like, don't forget, you know, they walked away from Mookie Betts with the Red Sox. Well, they didn't walk away, traded Mookie Betts because it didn't fit their model. Now, Mookie Betts went on to win the World Series with the Los Angeles Dodgers, but still, like, this isn't an ownership group that is afraid to make the big and very unpopular decision. Because they've done it in baseball with the Red Sox.
And I can speak to the Liverpool aspect of it because I'm a big Liverpool fan, and what they have prided themselves on is finding those younger guys on, like, when they try and make a transfer that they pay a little bit less for, but develop them in their system. That is the Liverpool way. Liverpool, you know, over the last 5 years has finished within the top four in the Premier League. They've won a Premier League title. But they've done it while net spending way less than the other teams who are also in that conversation. So hockey's a little bit different because of the cap, but I do believe that is part of the conversation when it comes to the Penguins on how they're going to build this team. Find those, like the Leafs did with, like, a Michael Bunting. That's along those lines. So, you know, a player that other teams may not value, or a guy who's on the up, that maybe the team isn't so sure about, those are the guys they're going to take chances on.
Like, we're going to see now. Like, this is, we talked about this plenty of times when the sale went through. This is the future of sports ownership. Like, you know, Fenway tried to buy MLSE initially. I think you're going to start to see, you know, mega groups now. A lot of people have talked about this. You know, giant groups that own a team in every league. You know, and ultimately they, you know, launch their own streaming service. But I really do believe this is the future of sports ownership. And now it's come to the NHL. We've seen it in other sports. And now it's come to the National Hockey League. So we're going to get a chance now this offseason. Like, right away, it's jump right in because there are huge decisions with the Penguins. We're going to see how this sports group operates because this is the future of sports ownership. Like, I think we're starting to see, you know, very much, like, you look at Pittsburgh itself. The Penguins are the only team now, the only team in the Pittsburgh market that isn't run by a family.
Yeah, that's true.
Penguins are the only one. You know, this is, you know, by the time the industry is done with us, notice I said it that way, Maddie, and not, you know, not when we're done with the industry. When the time this industry is done with us, Maddie, I think this is going to be more the norm than the exception. And we're going to see how they behave with the Pittsburgh Penguins this offseason. Some may say it's ruthless. Some may say it's wise. Some may say it's just business. And it's probably all of the above. And we're going to see it play out with the Pittsburgh Penguins. But interesting comments from Malkin. I'm sure he'd love to stay too, but he'd also love to get paid. Thank you very much.
No kidding. Okay, you want to play a game? Since we're...
Yeah, sure. You know, while we're tap dancing, waiting for some press conferences.
Yeah, the Toronto Maple Leafs continue to amaze on and off the ice. All right, staying or going? And the guy that we had just talked about, Evgeny Malkin.
Staying or going? Unless he comes down significantly with his ask, I think he's going.
Okay, I feel the same way. Here's an interesting one. Claude Giroux. That's a nice place to play, and I would take less money there, especially with the tax situation. You probably can.
Yeah. Building a home in Ottawa. I think it depends on how the playoffs go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, put it this way. If the Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup, and they might, Does Claude Giroux stay in Florida or does he go to Ottawa?
Yeah, I feel like he is more likely to leave if they win the Stanley Cup.
That's exactly what I said. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, I thought you said stay.
You win your cup and you go home. No.
Yeah.
Win your cup and go home.
Yeah. No, I agree with that one. This one, I think I know where you're leaning. Chris Letang.
I think he's going.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that sentiment.
I think. Listen, we all know about defensemen getting paid and Letang, even though he's a 35 player. I know everyone's trying to tie him to Montreal because they can't use Cortex, all of it, but it very much feels to me like if I'm, again, this is a game where I'm forced to say one or the other, I'll say going.
I just like, you know what I want? You know, Vegas.
You know who I wonder? You know who I wonder about through all of it? Crosby. Like, I know they're going to have cap space to do something here, but you know, if they're looking for that kind of flexibility, like what kind of team does Sidney Crosby want to have here?
Yeah,
because at a certain point, we're going to be talking about, you know, Crosby. Like, obviously, he's got three more years left on term, but we're going to be asking Sidney Crosby about, you know, what do you want to do with the remaining years of your time in the NHL? Which is weird.
We make it seem like he's going to an old folks home. What would you like to do with your remaining years, sir?
Where would you like to live? What would you like for lunch? You want the green Jell-O or the red Jell-O? Oh, both. We can make that happen, sir.
Oh, man. Okay, Marc-Andre Fleury. This seems like he's got to be gone.
I think he's gone.
Yeah,
I think like, when you start talking about, you know, decisions with the family and you've tied him to Pittsburgh previous, I don't know. I think going.
And he won't go to Washington. I mean, everything just points to him going back to Pittsburgh. It really does.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh.
Mark Giordano.
Depends on how deep a discount he wants to take.
Yeah.
So my gut says, I mean, today on the podium, he talked about, you know, the Stanley Cup and winning is the most important thing to him right now. Like, he can see the clubhouse in his career, right? Like, he's like, mm-hmm. We're really winding this down here, and I'd like to win a Stanley Cup. Thank you very much. It'll probably depend on what offers he gets from contenders. And if, you know, the Maple Leafs are the only contender that offer him something, then he comes back. So that one kind of has a caveat to it.
Yeah,
it's all going to be whichever contender offers him, whichever he thinks the best contender is.
I have this sneaky suspicion he's staying. Just my gut. Yeah, I think he'll take that discount because he wants to be there. Johnny Gaudreau. Is that another one that depends on what happens in the playoffs?
Ooh.
Or does that depend on Matthew Tkachuk?
Excuse me. No. See, about a player like Johnny Gaudreau, I always wonder about this. How much are you concerned about legacy? And how much are you concerned about legacy with one team and writing record books and becoming known as the best player this organization ever had? Like, I know it's easy to say, oh, you know what? He's best buddies with Hayes. He's working on him. He's going to go to the Flyers next year. It's an easy one to say. Or he's going to the New Jersey Devils or somewhere in the Devils, the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, the local boy goes home story. Yeah, that's not always fun. It doesn't always work. You know, look at player like, well, I mean, go ask Sheldon Surrey how much fun it was trying to live the local boy goes home story.
Yeah, it doesn't
work. My gut says he stays. Again, I'm basing this off nothing other than my gut and thinking that if I'm Johnny Gaudreau, I'm looking at legacy with an organization. Yeah, my gut says he stays.
Yeah, I kind of lean towards that. We're going to blow through this break here because it sounds like Sheldon Keefe should be speaking at any moment. So as soon as we were to hit a break, I'm sure that they would step up to the podium.
because
Murphy's Law. Yeah, it always is. This one may be a little bit easier, but I wonder, Philip Forsberg.
I still believe that Forsberg stays in Nashville. Now, if it were that easy, then the deal would already be done, right?
That's what,
like,
I'm thinking.
I've looked at Forsberg and I've said, okay, so what's the magic number here? So is he going to get as much as Roman Josi?
Nope.
9.059. No. But is he going to get more than Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson? 8. Yes.
He should.
So I've looked at it, and like all along I've said, this one gets done at $8.5 million. Because that's where that's where it feels like. Like a little bit more than Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson, but not as much as Roman Josi.
But that's to stay in Nashville. Like we know what the premium.
That's to stay in Nashville.
Yeah.
That's to stay in Nashville. Now there are other teams. There are other teams, whether you're like maybe the Los Angeles Kings would look at Philip Forsberg. That would make some sense. Mm-hmm. I would look at the Vancouver Canucks and say, like, ooh, you know what? That makes some sense too. Listen, I'd look at the Boston Bruins that would make some sense as well. Essentially, look around the league and say, who needs goal scorers? I'm of the belief, though, based on everything that I've been told and people that I've spoken to, that obviously they want him there. He wants to be there. I know I've always said 8.5 gets this one done. It seems obvious. And then whenever I mention it, usually it's Friedman too, who says, well, if we're just that simple, why isn't it done yet?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that sentiment.
But I still think he stays in Nashville.
Yeah.
You know, Colorado was interested, right? Did I tell you that one?
Yes, you did. And
so
that would
when
be...
they were, yeah, for our listeners that may not have have heard that one, when they were going through their contract situation with Gabriel Landeskog, and you know, teams like the St. Louis Blues were licking their chops, thinking, "Ooh, we might be able to bring in Landeskog here." Excuse me. Colorado, as I'm told, approached the Nashville Predators and essentially said, "If we can't get Landeskog done, can we get Forsberg?" You want a thought on that one?
That's, well, I mean, like we talk about all the time, they're in on Artemi Panarin too. I wouldn't be shocked if they made a call to Chicago on Patrick Kane. They're in on everybody, right? And that's that. But Jeff, that's what good teams do.
Here we go. Sheldon Keefe at the podium.
Obviously, a few days have passed here now since the series. So having more time to think about it, really, I still sit here today feeling similar to how I felt after the loss, disappointed in the results, but had tremendous belief in our group and continue to have tremendous belief in our group and the effort that they gave us. In particular, I felt that we really stepped up and leaned in key moments and pushed and were not afraid of losing. We were aggressive in our approach, and the mindset of our team that we built to the regular season that came out through the playoffs against a very tough opponent. Obviously, we did not get the results that we want, and that stings, mostly because of the belief we had in the group and what we had accomplished together. Believe that progress was made, even though it's hard to feel that way, obviously, when we're here again talking at the end of the first round. But the positive steps that we made as a team, we feel good about. And the work towards next season has already begun. I've now finished the first round of player exit meetings, and there'll be more to come this afternoon. But the work has begun, and the belief in our group is as strong as it's ever been. And we're looking forward to what's ahead.
Thanks, Coach.
Hi, I'll start. Coach, thanks for your time. I have to ask about the Marner incident, only because many people are asking in the city how he's doing. So I get the privacy and the sensitivity around what happened with him, but can you just describe, sir, what your reaction was when you heard that news, and just generally, how is he doing?
Obviously, the first reaction was general shock, and then concern for Mitch. But he isn't here today, and and had a meeting with him, which was a little bit different tone than some of the others for obvious reasons. But he seems to be doing well, all things considered, and now we're just most concerned about taking care of him and allowing him opportunity to get through this.
Luke?
Hi, Sheldon. When you reflect on the series, is there anything you think you could have done differently from a coach's perspective to, you know, change that difference? It was a matter of inches.
Well, whether it's before, during, or after games, I mean, there's hundreds of decisions that are made for every game. And too soon at this point for me to have dissected all of those. Not that I will spend a lot of time going through all of them, but over the course of the offseason, we'll look at those kind of things. At the end of the day, what I really felt good about with our group is through decisions that were made, whether they're tactical or whether they're personnel related, I thought the group responded really well, not just in the playoffs, but even down the stretch as we were trying different things and looking to prepare ourselves for what was to come, which we knew no matter who the opponent was going to be, it would be a challenge, and we would have to be flexible in our approach. And I thought through any of the decisions that, whether it's myself or any of the other coaches made, the players embraced it and did all that they could to go out and execute.
Terry?
Hey, Sheldon, where does the roster need the most improvement after you had the season you had and then we're so close to beating the two-time defending cup champs? What do you see in the holes, if you will, if you want to look at it that way?
Yeah, I mean, I'll leave those questions or certainly those answers to Kyle to go through, and that's his department. My job is to have the team as prepared as possible to play. I really believed in this group and felt that we had everything that we needed to succeed. Like I said, we're left here, you know, now talking about the fact that we weren't able to get it done and falling just short. But when I look at different elements that we had throughout the playoffs and throughout the series to handle whatever was coming our way and the way the group came together, I was really happy with how they handled themselves and how they performed. Now the challenge for us collectively is to bring it to the next level, the required level, which, as I've said, I don't feel is as far away as it may appear, but it's still, obviously it was not good enough. So, you know, my focus is right now on the players that we know are returning and you know, we'll build it out from there.
Maybe just a follow-up to that, Sheldon. When it is as tight as it was against Tampa, and really mistakes, capitalizing on mistakes, put the series in their favor, where do you see the growth then? How can the team overcome those sorts of things a year from now, potentially?
Well, you know, like I'm saying, there's it's such a fine line between winning and losing, right? It's one shot here, one save there, which ultimately is sort of the way that our series went, certainly down, you know, through games 5, 6, and 7. So the challenge as a coach is to reflect on the series and dissect the series, dissect the season, not overreact one way or another over the result necessarily. You know, I think there's a lot of details inside of every game that will be our focus. Trying to be as good as possible. I mean, there's when we've gone up going up against the back-to-back champions, you can see details inside their game that you know, that they can execute at a very consistent level, and that a lot of ways, a lot of times, is what makes the difference.
Kevin? Sheldon, we all kind of presume you'll be back more or less with the same roster. What will be different next year that gives you reason to think that you can take it to the next level?
Well, again, I really believed in a lot of things that we did this season, and a lot of the areas that we were looking to grow in, believe we grew. Individually, you know, we look at players that a year ago, you know, didn't play to their capabilities or to their expectations. We believe played well, and whether it's through production or through energy and competitiveness and drive, that we were right there So there was a tremendous growth in a lot of areas of our game. And we'll continue to refine our team game and continue to work with our individuals on getting better, while at the same time feeling good about the fact that we've built us an even stronger foundation now. And it's tough coming through these things because the ultimate progress you're looking for is to continue to be playing beyond the first round. Yet, look at the 89 games that we played, and the first 82 gave us a good chance going into the series, obviously with home ice advantage and knowing we're playing as a challenging opponent. And I look at how we started the series. We came out and asserted ourselves, how we responded each time when we lost a game. Just so many different things that I felt good about the team that I thought was great progress and the type of progress you need to have as a team. And then we need to find a way ultimately to just close it out. That's really what it comes down to.
When it comes to these exit interviews, are you learning things about the players that you didn't know before, or is it you sending them home with messages for what to do over the summer? What's the process that these are all about?
I don't think I'm necessarily learning much about the individuals. I think a lot of that happens throughout the season and the different meetings and interactions you have with players. My approach at least is you try to learn from them their perspective on what happened. Sometimes when the season's over, you'll get even more truth. Now, with that said, I believe that we had great and open discussions, whether it was individually or through our leadership meetings that we have throughout the season. I believe there's great trust there, and that our interactions are productive. But you know, when the season's over, it's different. You have a different perspective, and maybe you can learn more. You know, you have discussions with some of the players that are newer, such as Mark Giordano as an example that comes in and has been other places. You know, what can you learn about that? About his perspective on our team and how we do things. So you're trying to glean that type of information, get a sense of where the group is at, and then most importantly, set the players up for their off season of some things to be focusing on. But it's very surface level stuff at this point, and then we'll dig into it further and communicate further as the off season moves along.
Justin.
Hey, Sheldon, you sent out a lot of different looks with John Tavares as a centerpiece on that second line throughout the playoffs and the regular season as well. When you strategize and look forward and think about what the organization needs to do to optimize the final 3 years of his contract, what would be the ideal surroundings, do you think, for him on that second line and him moving forward here?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things inside that. Obviously, with John himself, and I think at times this season played tremendously well. And I thought certainly in the back half of our series in Tampa against Tampa, really came on for us, scored some big goals, was big in key moments. And you know, no matter who his line mates were, was able to adjust. And I think that has been a bit of a calling card for John and through his career, is to adjust and play with different people. In terms of how it shakes out, you know, we'll continue to look at that. But obviously, you know, he's paired well with William Nylander, you know, throughout his time here, and certainly the last couple seasons. At times, I've chosen to separate and split it up for not just reasons related to John or William, but for our entire team. So we'll continue to look at those kind of things and make those decisions. But those are not things that are not decisions or discussions we're having at this point. We've got an off season to do that and find the ultimate, the ultimate decision there, which as I said, the ability to be flexible on it, I think, is important. And then in addition to that, we also don't know, you know, what the final roster will look like.
Steve, down in front here.
Sheldon, about 8 or 9 of your players had career years, the best they've ever played, the best they've ever produced. How difficult is it to take that group, assuming they're all together, and go to another level when they've gone to a level now that they've never been at before?
Well, Steve, I think a big part of that for me, again, goes back to how, you know, we I was asked a question earlier about what needs to change going into next season. I think there's the foundation that we thought was strong a season ago is even stronger now. Players have even greater confidence and belief in themselves. And then also, you know, what comes of that is greater belief in each other. I think that we had career years. We also set, you know, franchise records and competed in a very tough division through the regular season to put ourselves in a position to succeed in the playoffs. We believe each individual player, as we get to know them, and whether they're maturing and moving into their prime, or they're players that are getting older and adjusting their games or their style of play, whatever it might be, that we get to know our players better, we can help and assist them to get to where we need to get to. But it's also just all the more reason for us to believe in the group, that confidence is such a tremendous thing for any player, no matter where you're at in your career. And we have a lot of confident people, not only in their own game and where they're at and what they accomplished this season, but in our team. And again, that's why this one feels different coming out of this loss. And then at the same time, it also stings that much more because we had so many things that were moving in the right direction for us as a team. So to not be able to play on is tough to take, because there was that belief there with our group. But that hasn't gone away, and we'll continue to get to work this offseason and be ready for an opportunity for us to see if we can build upon that. We believe we can.
Mark?
Sheldon, how did you feel about the power play in the series? Was there anything holding it back from being the difference maker it was in the regular season for you guys?
Well, with the power play, like a lot of other areas of our game, you know, the expectations for the power play, I think, grew because we established it as an elite power play, number one in the NHL over the course of the season. And then, you know, so that in itself is another area of our game that grew from the season prior. So you go into it and you have hopes or expectations that the power play is going to be the threat that it was. So having it not be at that level is disappointing, and thus makes it as something we'll continue to look at. Obviously the opponent has a say in it, and both in their structure and the unit they put together, how they play against you, and then the goaltender ultimately. But there's some process related things in there that we'll continue to look at. We're certainly not content with where we were even in the regular season, and certainly in the playoffs we needed to be better.
Lance?
Most of us consider you and Kyle to be joined at the hip in many ways, but what do you think the first round exits over the past few years, what strain has that put on the relationship, do you think?
I don't think it's put any strain on the relationship necessarily. Obviously, we continue to push and challenge each other. That's been the foundation of our relationship from our early days working together in Sault Ste. Marie, is how we can push and challenge one another and have open discussions be as honest as you can be, and without fear of anything else getting in the way or distracting us from what we need to do, which is to find a way to get our team to play better and find our way through these moments.
115 points, of course, but do you feel you left some on the table, and ultimately that affected the first round matchup? Is that something next year that you look to take more full advantage of when you look at the matchup that Florida got, for example?
Certainly, we talked about this through the regular season, you know, that I felt that was something that was important to us, to recognize the value in that. It is in theory, it is easy to do and focus on in practice through the course of an 82 game season. The demands of an NHL schedule, you're going to have games that you're not at your best. We need to find a way to be more consistent in that sense. Now, we were consistent in a lot of other ways, which was the reason why we were where we were in the standings and ultimately had home ice, but without a question, we left points on the table there. And that's an area for us as we look at things through the regular season. There's not a lot to pull out of that where we would say, you know, we could be better in this area or that. Certainly our start to the season would be one. And then, you know, those games that you're referring to where we left points on the table would be another. Of course, what I loved about the season is how we performed against the top teams in our league, and our performance in those games ultimately was really the big reason why we were where we were, and winning those head-to-head matches that we had a lot, certainly inside our division, gave us a good chance there. But definitely, you know, as we look back on the regular season, you know, those points left behind bothered us at the time, and certainly continue to.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm just curious, how do you make sure that the message next year doesn't get stale after, you know, it's like year after year of the same results?
Well, that's my challenge as a coach, and that's something that I think about a lot. I think the first thing is we have great coaches around me. The coaching staff we had this season, to me, I felt certainly in my time here, we've had great coaches, but this year was the most cohesive group that we had in terms of really being able to use the different voices to, you know, to work with our team. We've got coaches coming in from different organizations here now. Obviously, Dean Chanel's been around the league for a long time in various roles in various organizations, and Spencer Carberry's, you know, been a head coach in the American Hockey League and worked in both Washington and Boston organizations at the same time. And Manny Malhotra's, you know, been in the NHL for a very long time as both a player and a coach here now. So having those guys to lean on was, first of all, a big thing for me. And there was a lot of times, even this season, where I wanted them to have a bigger voice, you know, to share and spread our message. But I think the biggest thing for me is just to continue to have strong relationships with our players and trust in what we're doing. And in the early going here at the exit meetings, that's been very positive in terms of the feedback that we're getting and the belief that they have in what we're doing. So that's really it. And, you know, the message is not necessarily the same, certainly won't be the same, because I think our team is evolving and we're getting closer to where we need to be. We made tremendous strides this season individually and collectively. So, you know, I'll continue to look at different ways that we need to get better. And we'll work at that as a coaching staff. And the biggest thing is our players know we're close, but they know we're not there. So we have an audience that is very willing to change and adapt and continue to push themselves. In this case, controlling all that they can control, which is to have a tremendous offseason.
Thanks, Coach. Just be a few moments as we switch up the table for our two next speakers, Brendan and Kyle.
Okay, so that's head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Sheldon Keefe, opening up by saying he still feels the same way that he felt after Game 7 on Saturday. Not exactly a surprise. But one of the things that I thought, like, there's one thing that Keefe mentioned in there that I thought was particularly intriguing. And something that we've talked about before and hasn't really been, you know, acknowledged or talked about by the coach that extensively. Now, he talked about, you know, he believes in the team's, you know, growth and what they've done year after year over year. Last year they didn't play to their capabilities. This year they started to play to their capabilities, ending by saying the players on this team know they're close, but they're still not there. But there was one really interesting, and it might have felt like a throwaway comment to some, but I don't think it was. I think it was a very deliberate comment that Keefe made right out of the gate, where he said something to the effects of, this team isn't afraid of losing. No, they're not afraid of losing. And we've talked a lot about the psychology of winning in sports and the psychology of winners. And we've talked about, you know, there is a, you know, there is a certain phobia around winning sometimes, you know, success phobia. It is actually a thing, you know, a fear of success because perhaps it creates expectation for you that seems overwhelming. Like this is a thing in real life, folks. Like, and we've always talked about, you know, sports can teach a lot of things about real life. I think that, you know, there has been something there for the Maple Leafs. And for Sheldon Keefe to talk about his team in terms of not afraid of losing. You know, you can go into any game, any confrontation, any situation and say to yourself one of two things here. Oh man, I better not lose, or oh man, I better win. And it's a mindset shift, and people a lot smarter than me, who do this for a living can explain it a lot better than I can. But that is an interesting twist. You know, this is a team that's not afraid of losing. When you're not afraid of losing, generally, you do the things you need to do in order to win. Interesting comment there by Sheldon Keefe. That was one of maybe the big takeaway for me because Sheldon did a really good job, I thought, of protecting his players, et cetera, and deferring to the general manager for general manager questions and didn't do much to get himself in any hot water there, which when you're the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, your first goal is to not make a headline in a press conference like this. Not afraid of losing. It's the one takeaway I took from that one. Let's hit a break. When we come back, we will hear from Brendan Shanahan. Kyle Dubas scheduled to speak as well. You're listening to the Jeff Merrick Hockey Show. I know a lot of oxygen being taken right now by the Maple Leafs. I get it. It's one of those days. More on the Maple Leafs as we continue across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the program here. Quickly back to the podium, Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan.
We share in everybody's frustration. In not getting the job done. Certainly, as we look forward to next year, there's always going to be new faces. That being said, we will not be making changes just simply for the sake of saying that we made changes. With that, I think that, you know, Kyle built a very good hockey team. I think he made excellent adjustments along the way. And I think Sheldon is an excellent coach. As we look forward to next year and getting to work toward next year, I think it's important to sort of state that I see both of them as being extremely important in getting us to the next level so that when we do approach next year and we do come back, that we are ready to take that next step. As Kyle had said to the players today, the work for next year begins right now, and I look forward to getting to work with Kyle and Sheldon for next season. Kyle.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, everybody. Obviously, we're here today at a point where we are proud of the progress that was made during the year. However, we weren't able to take the key step and the most important step at this time of the year. And, beginning essentially Saturday night, right at the final buzzer, you begin to get ready to get to work and get into the off season right away to ensure that we aren't in this position again as we move forward, and that we're doing everything we can to surround our coaching staff and players and support staff with everything that they need to continue to push and break through. And that will be my job and our management team's job during the off season. I think the regular season gives me great hope for the team, and the way that we competed in that series against Tampa gives me further belief in the team. However, we need to take those next steps, and that's what all of our attention and all of our effort will be put into, and that started on Saturday night at 10:05. I'll open it up for questions.
Thank you. We'll start with Terry on the side here.
Question for Kyle. Do you come back with the same core then? Do you keep knocking on that door, or do you anticipate more changes than just some of the things you did last year?
I think, Terry, the way that that we'll approach the offseason is the way that we always have, which is I don't view it as, you know, just the core four. I never refer to the team in those exact terms. I look at the core group as a whole and try to determine what's the best way that we can move ahead with trying to accomplish our goal and reaching our potential. And if there's a way that we can improve the team and become a better team, then we'll do that. But going back to what Shani had said, I don't think that we want to start just making changes that may be lateral or make us inferior as a team just to say that we changed something. And I think in these moments, it's easy to say that you believe at the beginning of a year. It's easy to say that you believe when you won or that you always have. I think in these moments where you have not reached the potential that everyone knows that you have and that you especially internally know that you have, that's when true belief is measured. And I do believe in the group. That said, I think with every off season, no matter what the end result was, we would look at the entire group and we'll do that in the coming weeks and determine how we want to move ahead.
And just to follow up to that, you have a long relationship with Jack Campbell. You have a long relationship with Jack Campbell, Kyle. We all know that. Is it a priority to get him back under contract for next year and beyond for you?
Yeah, I don't. I do have a long relationship with him. I think that I would put Jack in the same grouping in terms of he, Ilya Mikheyev, Mark Giordano, Andre Kasha, that are unrestricted free agents, Ilya Lyubushkin. In that we'll sit down as a group here in the coming days and weeks, and then Brandon will get to work in speaking with their representatives, get an idea of what expectations are. We'll begin to look at the marketplace and then make our decisions from there.
Josh?
For either of you guys, in a vacuum, it's a great season. You know, 115 points, lots of franchise records, lots of personal records. Lost the two-time defending cup champs in seven games, but it's not a vacuum. You know, whether it's 5-6 years, whether it's 18 years, whether it's 55 years, how do you balance the knowing that you're close, but also knowing that this group couldn't push it over the line?
What I would say to that, Josh, is I don't think that this group carries the burden of 18 or 55 years. We're focused on the group that we have. A lot of them have accrued some experiences and some falling a little short from time to time. I do think that this season, you mentioned the regular season, but I also think the playoff series and the way that the group played was different. I didn't feel in games 5, 6, or 7 that we were on our heels or reacting to another team dictating to us the way that the game was going to go. Game 5, we battled back. Game 6, we battled back. In Game 7, I didn't feel like in the previous years where we were passive and then had to play catch up down 2 or 3 goals in the game and the game got away from us. I thought that the guys came out and played hard, and it was likely the best opponent that we faced in that time. And I think now more than ever, it's looking at it that way. And I know that the easy thing to do would be to make bold statements or bold changes, but it's continuing to maintain that belief at this time that's vitally important.
Yeah, thanks for Brendan. It's been a while. Toronto's a hockey town, and they're incredibly compassionate and sympathetic people as well. Can you put it into context when it comes to what happened with Mitch last night, generally speaking, and what your immediate thoughts were when you heard the news?
Well, I was shocked when I first heard the news, as everybody was, and immediately your first thought goes to, is he all right? And whoever he was with, are they all right? As the players have probably reiterated many times today, we've been asked by the Toronto Police Service to not speak specifically about the case. I also want to thank them for their attentiveness and the work that they do every day, but especially in this particular case. So we don't want to get into those specifics, but obviously you just care for the well-being, and you're as much as you are upset that it happened, you're thankful that it wasn't worse.
Kevin?
Kyle, in previous playoff exits, you had any number of things go wrong, like a Nazem Kadri suspension or a John Tavares injury or Jake Muzzin injured twice. This year was completely different. You actually got healthier, it seemed, as the playoffs went on. In your mind, what would be different next year? Why the belief that you have in the group, why was it different if a completely healthy lineup couldn't get it done this year?
Well, I think, Kevin, it's a fair question. I think that the team continues to grow. And though the result at the end of the year, it's hard to sit up and say because the result at the end of the year is lost in game seven of the first round. But the way that the team played in the regular season and in the way that we played in the series, I think was much different than those previous years, as I'd previously outlined. And that's what leads me to think that, and just going through these exit meetings and speaking with Sheldon right after, and speaking to the players right after, they know that that we're close, but they also know that the closest part and the closing part is the hardest part. And they seem, you know, only whatever it's been 72 hours gone, they seem fully accepting and ready to embrace that more so than the other groups where there was more excuse making or looking for answers. I think they know what the answer is, and it's within, and it's still a young group. If you look at the Austins, Mitches, Williams, and they're going to continue to get better and improve. And then the other part to that is it falls on me. So it falls on me to continue to find the right pieces to go around the group to improve it and push us ahead. Continue to adapt my approach, work with our management team, adapt our approach, and find the right pieces that can continue to move us ahead. So I think, you know, I know the coaching staff and the players are going to do their part, and I have to do my part. And that's what, you know, we've already got to work on the last few days, and we'll get to work on in the coming weeks and months.
Matt.
Brendan, 25 years ago, you hoisted your first Stanley Cup as a player, and you were a piece that was traded to that team sort of to put it over the top. But it required a big sacrifice at the time for Detroit, right? Paul Coffey, Keith Primeau. So my question to you is, what is the piece that will put this team over the top, and will it require a similar sacrifice?
Well, I don't think you can ever compare any one season and say, like, this is exactly the same situation. Sometimes it is a trade, and sometimes it's development from within, and sometimes it's just the same players going out, trying the same thing and getting a different result. Our focus is on trying to improve. Our focus is on trying to get better. Regardless of what the outcome was in this year's playoffs, there are always going to be changes that are made, and it's always our intention to improve as a team and to get better. So I don't like to sort of specifically point to any one particular team or any one particular way of doing it. There's lots of different ways to win a cup, and we have to figure out our way. And I do think that whether that is an opportunity that we feel we can improve our team through a trade, regardless of who that player is, or if it's something within, I think we've got some good young players who are on the way up who are going to be interesting players for us. And I think that the development of our people and staff that are here to go out and sort of be determined to work harder and to get a different result.
Dave McCarthy.
Brendan, John Tavares an hour or so ago talked about continuing to find ways to make the group feel uncomfortable in pursuit of the ultimate goal. The core group, extending just beyond the forwards, has been here for a number of years. You've had a number of opportunities. The results haven't come, and the messaging seems to be that you're going to continue to stay the course. Do you worry that comfort can seep into this group and maybe subconsciously or not work against the group?
I don't think playing in any passionate hockey market will allow for comfort to seep into a group. I think if you reflect on that question, you would agree, and your experience being around the players and the team, that that's one of the greatest parts about playing in Canada and one of the greatest parts about playing in Toronto or in any great hockey market is the constant push that, look, before these guys even get to the NHL, they're absolutely driven individuals to make it to the NHL. But certainly when you get here and you play in a passionate hockey market, I see it as an advantage. And I think that many of our players do too. And our players have embraced playing here in Toronto. They don't want to be anywhere else. They want to be the ones to change the narrative in Toronto, and they're committed to doing that.
Steve Downfront.
Yeah, I think the positive on that, Steve, is that we've gotten used to that. And, you know, last season we were faced with, very similar exercise and I think a similar question of how are we going to improve when, you have certain UFAs or RFAs that are coming up. Some are going to be due raises, some you're not going to be able to afford. And I think the answer is we need to replicate in most regards the way that we operated last summer, and going out and being able to find players that can come in and add to our group and do so at not a very high cost, but by being able to take advantage of the opportunity and flourishing. And I think that falls onto me and our player personnel department more than anybody else to go out and find those players again. So it's a challenge. And in the current environment, I think most teams that are contending, I looked at one point this year and you have 17 teams, I think it was, or 18 teams at or over the cap with LTI. And, you know, with the pandemic and the effects that that's had on the game, it's always going to make that challenging. And I think it's a challenge that we embraced last summer, especially coming off the series that we did last year and the disappointment that we had then. And we need to replicate that again but also eliminating any mistakes at all, because the margin for error is so much smaller. So it's a challenge, one that we embrace and one that, you know, in the future will be judged on.
Justin.
Kyle, the situation around Tavares from a lineup standpoint was sort of in flux the back half of the season into the playoffs. So lots of different looks were thrown at him, line mates, so on and so forth. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Sheldon Keefe lauded him for his flexibility just now. But there was always an understanding when he signed that deal that the latter two, three years could look a little bit different. So in saying that, what can you do to help maximize the remaining 3 years on the deal for Tavares and maybe even beyond that?
Justin, I would say that I view my job, whether it's John or anybody else, to be giving Sheldon and be giving the players the pieces around them that are going to allow their primes to be extended as long as possible. So I have never gone into any long-term deal and felt that the back half may be a challenge or that the player will need to adapt. I think we need to, as players age, we have the resources here to be able to try to help them as much as possible in every regard, on and off the ice, and we need to continue to do that. But also with regards to roster construction, players are going to change as they age, inevitably, and we need to, as a management team, be always supporting them with the pieces that are going to best allow them to maintain their primes as long as possible. So whether it's John or anybody else on our team that you would say is over that, whatever you want, I mean, different people view the prime year as a different, some would say it's 24, some would say it's 27, some would say it's 30, whatever it is, we want people that can come here and maintain that level as long as possible. And I think that falls on us.
And fair if it's too soon, but if Jason Spezza wants to come back, will there be a spot for him?
That'll be a conversation that I'll have with Jason here in the coming days and weeks, and then we'll report back.
Okay. Mark?
Brendan, last year on exit day, a lot of talk about killer instinct being missing. What, if anything, do you want your players to take away from the way this most recent series played out?
Well, I think as Kyle alluded to, and as I watched and observed in our fans and watched and observed as well, we, in spite of the fact of not being able to finish Tampa off in game six and in game seven, I saw a different team and a different approach. I thought that in the past couple of seasons when we've had an opportunity to eliminate a team, we got back on our heels. One of the things that I liked about this year's process, despite the result, was that our team was on its toes. I liked their starts, I liked their comebacks, I liked the fight that they showed and the embracing of those moments. They just didn't get the job done. But the process, to me, what makes me feel more encouraged, doesn't take away my disappointment, but what makes me feel more encouraged was that it was a completely different approach. So we're still seeking that killer instinct, but we were doing a lot more of the things that you need to do in order to get that job done than I've seen in the past couple of elimination games where I felt we looked a little bit on our heels. I thought that was a big change. And it's a matter for us to keep encouraging them that when they're doing the right things, to not get frustrated and move away from those. And we see room and areas of improvement as well, and we will address those over the summer, and we'll address it over the course of next season. I think that's the one thing, again, that we stress to our players when they came back this season, and was that the regular season is important. There are certain things and skills that we have to do in order to prepare ourselves for those moments when we get in the playoffs, and that'll be the same next year. The regular season is incredibly important to hone those skills and to sharpen those skills so that when we get in those moments, we're just that much better. We are, you know, those small increments better that are needed in order to be on top and advancing.
Josh.
Just to follow up on Justin's question, if Jason decides he doesn't want to play anymore, is there an interest in bringing him back in an off-ice role?
I've never had a player in that position before, Josh, so it'd be my first experience really going through that. I guess we had Ron Hainsey a few years ago, but he retired. He wasn't with us. He did a little bit with us and then went to the PA. So it would be uncharted territory for me. So I think I'll talk with Jason today. I think it's hard to really probably in sitting here fully describe the impact that he's had on the team positively. Obviously his contributions to the roster, but in the locker room, in the summer, the time he puts in with every single younger player from the day he's arrived, he's a special person. So I think there'd probably be 31 teams other than us that would have an interest in having him a part of it in some way. I don't know where his head will be at with everything, playing, not playing, working, family. So we'll sort through that first and then go from there.
You mentioned that, we all know about the salary cap kind of crunch that you guys are under. Do you think you need more from your Marlies, guys coming up, guys on ELCs next year?
Yes, I do. And I expect that we will. I think not only just the players that are the obvious ones that are higher picks, Josh, but also as you look at the bottom of our forward lineup in particular, guys that may not have as high a profile but can play specific roles and provide specific elements, whether it's speed, physicality, power and presence. So whether that's a Bobby McMahon, Curtis Douglas, Joey Anderson, players in that mold, in addition to the Robertsons and the like, that's where the focus will be for sure. And so I met with those players yesterday, and what their opportunity is going to be in training camp was made abundantly clear what they're competing for, and we do need those players to begin converting from being good prospects and good Marlies to good players for the Leafs, yes.
Luke?
Kyle, because of how the past few series have ended and because it's a hard cap world, do you reconsider the portion of money you're spending on the high-end forwards versus how much you're spending on, say, bottom six, defense, goaltending?
I think we always consider everything at the end of every season, during every season, and essentially every day, Luke. All of that said, I think the contracts to those players that you're referencing, I think they're providing us great value for them in the way that they're producing, in the way that they continue to evolve as they go through their contracts. So I don't regret those at all. And I just think it's the reality of the league right now that you're probably not going to be able to spend as much as you want on those depth pieces, and you're really going to have to do a great job finding value, whether that's someone that's coming off injury, someone that's been in, someone that hasn't been given great opportunity, someone coming off a bad year that you think you see something in that's a fit specifically with your team that you can bring them in and help. So whether that's a next year's edition of Bunting or Camp or Kasha, whatever different reason, that they're going to be a good fit, and that's really where we have to focus. I don't know that I've ever felt that it's best to detract some of your very best players to spread the dollars around players who aren't as good.
Thanks.
Brendan, you've worked with Kyle now, I think going on 8 years or something like that, and Kyle, you and Sheldon are kind of joined at the hip. To what degree are all these first-round failures putting a strain on those relationships, would you say?
There's a bunch of, you can make a lot of jokes about that, sleeping in separate bedrooms and things like that, but I'll stay away from that. I think when you go through those disappointments, as much as winning can bring people together, and we've, for some of us who've been fortunate to experience that, it's absolutely true. I think learning how to deal with the heartbreak and devastation of falling short, depending on what kind of relationship you have, can bring you close together as well. And to share some of those disappointments, not just with Kyle and Sheldon, but with our players who have now been here, to have our fans back in the building this year. I know we had a little bit of a pause there due to COVID in the regular season. But to see our fans and the support that they gave us and to have that back, Sheldon had mentioned after game one that our fans were the first stars of the game, and it was something that we were all talking about after that game. It was something our players were talking about. I don't know that in my time here I've ever seen and experienced in my time here where our players feel so connected to our fans. So again, you'd like to start mixing in quite soon those victories that pull you closer together. But for me, it just strengthens our resolve to support each other and get the job done. It strengthens my resolve to give them whatever they need in order for us to get over that hump and get through that those challenges and get to the place where we want to be.
Kyle, same question.
Yeah, I think with your question lies with regards to my relationship with Sheldon. We have worked together for at three different levels and three different teams. And we've won once together and in other seasons lost in conference finals, second rounds, and of course first rounds. But I think the great value in my relationship with him is that we can be very confrontational and challenging of one another. I've always thought this, and I thought this is the key, and just in my experience between the general manager and the coach's relationship is, can you argue, can you challenge one another, can you call each other out when you think that you're below the standard that you expect from one another, and not have that cause any long-term issues in the relationship, and more than that, have you come back the next day and be stronger, knowing you're both going towards the same goal. And I think that's always been the way it has been with Sheldon, and that's why I value that relationship with him as much as I do.
Thank you.
Kevin.
Kyle, I wanted to ask you a very broad question about this organization's prospect pool, but connected to two very specific questions. First off, what do you think of your organization's prospect pool from the Marlies on down? And can you update us on Rodion Imerov? And sure. Whether you think Hirvonen and Niemelä will be playing in North America next year?
Sure. I'll start with the first question about the prospect pool. I think in the last several drafts, we've really added to the depth of the pool. We haven't picked particularly high. The one time we did have a high pick, and I'll answer that subsequently on Rodion and the unfortunate situation there. But I think we feel as though these prospects are starting to push at the end of the year with the Marlies. Pontus Holmberg came over. He was a sixth-round pick in 2018, and he played exceptionally well for them, and we feel he'll challenge for the roster here next year. He played on the Olympic team. He's won a championship in Sweden. The next year you have Robertson. He's been up and down. Felt he played his best hockey at the end of the year. And you mentioned Niemelä and Hirvonen. So we feel that the depth is there. We added Matthew Nyes, Ty Voigt, and the goaltender Vyacheslav Peksa last year. All of them had exceptional seasons. So I'm very happy with where the amateur scouting staff has taken things, despite not having a lot of picks in two of the three drafts, really. And we need, as I told the players yesterday that are in that mold of Marlies or below, we need them to grow together and come together quickly and expedite things with their development in order for them to help our group. That's going to be the best way that we do it. With regards to Rodion, he's now back in Ufa after his first round of treatment in Germany, and then he'll go back to Germany here in the next month or so for a second round of treatment. And so we just cross our fingers and lots of hope and thought with him. But it's obviously been a very difficult situation because you get to know, you draft a player and you meet them. A month later they go, they're the top forward at the Karjala Cup. Everything is going great. They come over here. They have a great session here last year in the spring. And then, you know, essentially upon going back, the issues crop up, which eventually led to the diagnosis, which was, you know, the worst thing that you want to hear, especially when you're talking about a 19, 20-year-old young athlete with so much potential that had shown that potential since the draft even more so. So it's difficult. Just continue to support him. I am stunned with how positively he has handled the entire situation. It's really remarkable for someone being dealt that, how positive and optimistic he's remained, and it's quite inspiring. So that's been great to see. And then finally, Hirvonen and Niemelä, because of the transfer agreements, both have to be offered back to their respective teams. So Karpat and in Helsinki. So that'll be the situation there, unless they make the NHL roster.
And Brendan, one last one for you that's probably important only to people in this room, but would you expect us to be back in the room? You talk about relationships. Would you expect us to be getting our one-on-ones back in the dressing room next season?
Oh, I hope so. I hope so, Kevin. I think that if everyone's back in the room, that would be a good sign, not just, you know, for the hockey world, but for the community at large. So I think things like that will be discussed with the National Hockey League. And for me, again, the closer we as a community can get back to normal and having full buildings and getting back to doing what we used to do and love, and having those relationships is important. I hope so.
Mike.
Yeah, for both Brendan and Kyle, there's a doomsday clock as it pertains to Auston Matthews and a contract that's going to be coming up in 2024. How concerned are you that you're now down to essentially a two-year window to not only just win a round, but to win the whole thing?
I certainly don't view it as a doomsday clock. We're fortunate to have one of the best players in hockey under contract for two more years. And beyond that, he's a great player that we'd like to see play his whole career with Toronto. And he wants to win more than anybody. So he's on board with that, and every discussion that we have with him, and that's our focus, is building the best team possible to take advantage of having players of that caliber. Mike.
Do you not have to show more?
I didn't.
In order to re-sign, do you not have to show that this team can win?
That's a question for Auston more than it is for me and what he and his representatives are looking for in a team. I think in my conversations with him, he believes that we're close. I think he said that to everybody here, and he's going to be a big part of helping us get there as he continues to grow and evolve.
I agree with Kyle. I think that Auston has embraced being a Maple Leaf. He's had historical seasons here in what is still the early part of his career. He's got a lot of runway left. We love having him, and I agree with Kyle. We'd love to make him a Leaf forever. And he's been very supportive, and he's really sort of grown into a leadership role here. He's he's made obviously an immediate impact as a young player, as a rookie, but he's grown into a man, and he's just been fantastic for us in every asset, on the ice and off the ice, in the dressing room.
Mark.
Kyle, this was Jack's first time in this role in his career in the NHL. What did you learn about Jack Campbell this season?
I mean, it's been a great story. Certainly he came over in 2020, was sort of splitting the backup role or getting ready to do so in LA with Cal Peterson. Came here, was excellent for us in that stretch, and then last year became the starter midway through the year. When Fred got injured.
Okay, so that is the press conference, which is ongoing, which you can continue to watch and listen to at sportsnet.ca. More on the Kyle Dubas, Brendan Shanahan press conference, Sheldon Keefe as well, on Real Kipper and Bourne, starting at 3 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet 590 and The Fan in Toronto. Thanks to everyone involved today, most notably Matt Marchese and Lance Kennedy. Thanks for joining me. Back tomorrow.